Today on This Week in Iowa, the crisis in Ukraine. We unpack the history to better understand, then dive into how it impacts us here at home. And later, the State of the Union puts Iowa on the national stage. What the president and the governor have to say about the situation in our country. Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for being with us for This Week in Iowa. I'm Sabrina Ahmed. Watching the images come out of Ukraine, it's devastating. Death and destruction, a humanitarian crisis. I spoke to State Senator Zach Nunn, who is a former airman, about his history with Ukraine to get a better understanding of this conflict.
Senator Zach Nunn, thank you for the time. Let's just get started by talking about, give us a little history about what's been happening in Ukraine and Russia, Crimea, and what you want people to understand to be able to really digest what is happening right now with the Russian invasion into Ukraine.
Yeah, Sabrina, great question. So, you know, when we look at Ukraine, a relatively new country in the world coming out of the fall of the Soviet Union, really the breadbasket of Europe. And this is a country which I had the privilege to go and visit with under USAID to provide a election monitoring for some of the first free and fair elections within Ukraine. And what I saw there was pretty steely resolve by the Ukrainian people. At one of the polling places, we saw Russian separatists who had invaded in 2014 literally put landmines all around polling places to try and deter people from voting. And you would see people my grandmother's age go through these landmines to be able to cast their ballot, because they believe not only that strongly in democracy, but it was very fresh in their mind what a Soviet Russia had done to the Ukraine in the past. And that's now echoing forward. We see the defenders in Kharkiv, in Kiev, all manning the barricades, if you will, to be able to protect not just their country, but the fledgling democracy they helped forge.
So help people understand, why is this even happening? And why, I mean, I feel like and correct me if I'm wrong, but the narrative out of Russia very much is that that Ukraine is filled with Nazis.
Right. So you've got this extremist propaganda coming out of Moscow and really just from the Putin administration trying to highlight this, false narrative as a pretext for war against Ukraine. They've done this in other areas. In Georgia, they've threatened to take Russian minorities in Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia and Baltic states. But those are NATO countries. Ukraine is not. So when we look at Ukraine, they've already taken over two major regions in the east of the country and a very strategic port and airfield in Crimea back in 2014. Now, there's a lot of reasons for this, but you can argue that U.S. foreign policy has been lacking in this area, and it has emboldened people in Moscow to feel that they can walk into a sovereign democracy and take land from other people. In the case of Ukraine specifically, Russia has a narrative that this is part of the overall old Soviet empire, and that's clearly not the case. Ukraine has been a successful independent democracy. But the aspect here is that Russia is signaling more towards the West and what it wants to encourage a non-NATO aligned country to be in its sphere versus allowing it to make its own decisions. And the challenge here, Sabrina, is that we now see a autocratic world membership, whether that's Moscow, Beijing, Pyongyang, or in Tehran, all authoritarian governments trying to exploit this weakness coming out of the West to say, I'm going to look at intimidating Taiwan and China, or I'm going to look at intimidating Israel out of Iran, because this, they feel, is their window, and there's not a lot of pushback at this point.
I feel like you just unpacked a whole lot there. So on a global scale, what is the United States' role in this?
Yeah, so I think the United States should be, and I was with Secretary Pompeo and Senator Ernst earlier this week, and one of the things they said that really resonated here is that America first should not mean America alone. We have the opportunity to lay out some very clear guidance on what we as a democracy want to see in the world for our friends, for our allies, but also for our economic trade partners. And so one of the things that I look at when we say, how do we stand up to an autocrat like Russia? The United States very quickly could say, hey, we're going to cut off Russia's money from petrofuels. Right now, Russia sells the United States nearly 10% of its oil. In fact, the price of oil has hovered around 98 to 100 since this invasion. We at the pump in America are actually helping fund Putin's war against the Ukrainian people by continuing to buy this oil. My recommendation is cut off that 500,000 barrels of oil we buy from Russia every day. And let's go back to the energy independence that's made America so successful. We could turn on the XL pipeline and get 800,000 barrels today, or we could look at the other renewable fuels we produce right here in Iowa that could be very effective at energy independence, but also helping our allies who are trying to help themselves.
We continue to discuss the situation unfolding in Ukraine, but also turn our attention closer to home, how Ukraine impacts Iowa. Continuing to discuss the situation unfolding in Ukraine, it's important to highlight the impact on Iowans. When talking with Senator Nunn, he reminds us that Iowa has a strong connection to Ukraine, including a number of sister cities.
Sabrina, you're absolutely right. We have three sister cities, Newton in my district, Muscatine. We have a sister state partnership with a region within Ukraine. And, you know, what we are witnessing today is nothing short of war crimes. I talked to individuals who we work with who are part of the Iowa connection, who woke up not to her grandfather's clock in the morning, but woke up to shelling to the apartment complex next door that was leveled. The airport next to them came under indiscriminate missile fire. You look at Kharkiv and the amount of artillery shells that are just raining down. They're right near the Russian border, destroying city centers, shopping areas. We look at a number of the videos coming out here. You see Russian troops ingressing into country and pulling people out of their cars, seizing vehicles. MiG-29 aircraft, and I'm an Air Force guy. I flew recon mission against Russia. I know how aggressive Russian pilots can be. Here you've seen videos of a MiG-29 firing two missiles into a civilian community. Nothing other than to strike terror and fear into our long-term friends who have been allies of Iowa.
Obviously, that is a huge impact. And you talk about yourself serving over in Ukraine. I mean, is there potential that people from Iowa could have to go serve in Ukraine or in the areas surrounding there?
Right. So I think the United States has rightly made a commitment to our NATO allies that we will be supportive in moving them forward with troop movements in the area. We've also seen a number of even just our National Guard elements here in Iowa providing targeting packages, providing remote reconnaissance, preparing for a potential cyber attack that, while aimed at Ukraine, could quickly spill over into Europe and even us here in Iowa. So these are things that our military members, they're on the front line of defending, but they're also recognizing that this is not isolated to a Moscow-Kyiv debate going on.
But even more maybe granular than that would be how this is going to affect how much you, and I, you mentioned how much we pay at the pump, but there are supply chain issues that this is going to impact. So talk to me just about the financial impact that this invasion will have, especially if it continues on.
Yeah. So, Sabrina, you hit at the core of this. I mean, as tragic as it is, and as much as we support the steely resolve of the Ukrainian people, we're going to start feeling an impact here in Iowa. And it's not just going to be at the pump that we've already seen places with gas approaching $5 or 50 cents increases here in central Iowa. We're going to see supply chain challenges. So not only do we not have enough oil here in America, the rest of the world is going to be put in a situation where they're going to have less oil. And if we don't find an alternative source, that means it's more expensive to be able to travel trucks, to be able to get, seed to field. One of the first targets the Russians struck was the second largest fertilizer plant in Ukraine. That has no other intention than to try and starve out the rest of Europe. And as a result, we'll have a crescendo effect here in the United States for our growers. A huge aspect of this is, you know, just the supply chain. When we shut down airspace over Russia, that means everybody flying, it's the largest country in the world, now can't fly over Russia. It's going to have a huge tail lag on the amount of supply chain of things coming out of China, out of Europe, to the Middle East. So we're going to see a huge drain on our supply chain, which will have a secondary effect here in the United States. But perhaps I would just say, you know, one of the most direct aspects here is that we have a human cost that's happening. We have a number of Iowans who have exchange students, a number of Ukrainians who live here in Iowa. They're part of our community. They've been fantastic friends. And to watch their country come under attack, the real question is going to be, what's the United States doing to be a leader in this area? And how could we do more to help the humanitarian crisis that's going to quickly overwhelm Europe?
Senator Zach Nunn, thank you so much for your time. This is it's devastating to watch the videos and the photos coming out of it. So I do truly appreciate your insight and your perspective on the topic.
Hey, Sabrina, I think, you know, Iowans have big hearts. We are the heartland. Our hearts and our prayers are with the people of Ukraine. We salute the defiance that they've shown to the autocratic Putin regime. And the best thing that we can do is to continue to be supportive and keep their story alive. So, Sabrina, thank you very much for your coverage of this important event.
We'll talk soon.
Crisis mode for one Iowa family trying to adopt from Ukraine when the invasion began. The cries for help. And now to the story of an Iowa family attempting to adopt this 15-year-old boy. His name's Artem from Ukraine. They recently adopted three other kids from Ukraine in October and thought that history would then make Artem's adoption a whole lot easier. But then Russia invaded. We check in with the Breckenridge family on the issues they are running into.
We weren't planning on adopting again from Ukraine, but a family hosted Artem in Maryland. So we actually drove out to Maryland from Iowa here in January to meet him, fell in love, started the adoption process for him. Basically, we thought it would be even shorter than 9 months because we had adopted so recently. So it was basically just updating things and, you know, pushing things along pretty quickly. And then this all broke out and everything's stopped. So we can't work on any paperwork. There's nothing we can do right now other than wait. It's heartbreaking, truly. And we thought, you know, the last adoption process was crazy with COVID. We couldn't even imagine something like this. I mean, it's just unimaginable.
Where is Artem right now? What is he going through? Do you have any idea what he's seeing?
Yeah, the last time we heard from him was last Sunday. So the last message I got from him is he was going back down to the basement. That's the last thing I heard from him. But prior to that, we only talked for a few days, you know, as everything hit. Initially, he wasn't aware of anything. And then it was sheer panic. He was begging me to come get him, you know, tell me, you're my only hope. Just super scared. And he's a very emotionally available child. I mean, it's not super typical when you're adopting that you get that. And he's very available and he needs a family. Like, he grew up in a family. He wants that. So I know this is really hard for him, especially having no contact right now.
Scott, Jenna, what's going through your mind? What I mean, and I know that this is so emotional and so raw for you, but what could be happening to him right now in the last days when you haven't spoken?
Truly anything. I mean, yeah. Russia has taken over his city. I mean, they're in the city. Before we lost contact with him, he was telling us that, you know, he saw rockets and
sirens were going off and
the windows were shaking.
Gunshots going off.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine what could be going on right now.
It's hard to process that this is happening. You know, you see all this stuff on TV and what have you, but just to think of him sitting there along with millions of other innocent lives, it's really unimaginable.
Now, I know that you have spoken to Senator Chuck Grassley's office. I reached out to them as well. I was told by his office that, quite honestly, right now there's nothing that they can do because it is up to the Ukrainian government to make moves next. And to allow him to leave the country and to allow him to come here. Is that your experience in the past? Is that what it was like before when you were adopting the three boys? Was the U.S. government involved at all? And have you heard anything more than the State Department can't really do anything right now?
So during our last adoption, we a lot of delays again, you know, COVID, agency delays. One of the delays that we had was on the agency side. So we reached out to Senator Chuck Grassley's office, and they were able to push things along quicker for us in the USCIS process. So, I mean, they were helpful then. So we are hoping that if Artem gets out of Ukraine, that they can step up again and help us.
Is there any potential of you being able to help him get out of Ukraine? I mean, is there, what does that look like? It's so hard for me to fathom. You must feel so helpless.
Yeah, initially it was, you know, formulating all these plans. There was a lot of false hope, honestly, initially, because we didn't know what the process was, but we've been in contact with our agency basically daily. And everything is up to the ministry there in Ukraine, which they did take a big step 2 days ago in announcing that they will let the orphans go to Poland or
Moldova.
And they will cover everything for that. But now it's up to each individual directors of the orphanages.
So the family says their next hope is to get Artem into a neighboring country. From there, they can apply for a special visa to get him here. Now, keep in mind, Representative Hinson's office, Ashley Hinson from Congresswoman, said that it's all up to the Biden administration on whether they grant those special visas. First, though, that immediate goal is just to make contact. Of course, we'll follow their story and any other issues they face. Let's switch gears now to a popular restaurant in Des Moines. They are sharing their solidarity with Ukraine through food. Lucky Lotus on Ingersoll says they are donating proceeds from their new golden noodle dish to the World Central Kitchen. It's a nonprofit organization that donates meals around the world to humanitarian, climate, and community crises. World Central Kitchen is on the front lines giving meals to Ukrainian refugees and neighboring countries. Lucky Lotus has always felt inspired to give back, especially in ways that bring their culture, love, and joy.
Finding an organization like World Central Kitchen, which does something similarly but in a much bigger way, was something that we were really proud to see them do. And we feel very happy that we get to contribute to them in some sort of small way.
Now, keep in mind, this is only while supplies last, but golden noodles is a dish with chewy egg noodles. They're delicious, mixed with a sesame soy sauce with bean sprouts and green onions. For those who are vegan, they do have an option for you as well. It's called Pad Lao, which is similar to Pad Thai, but a little more sweet and savory. I'm telling you, I had it for lunch this week. It was great. Iowa on the national stage this week, delivering the Republican response to the State of the Union, how the president shapes our country, and how the governor says that's not the case. Two dueling visions of the country, President Biden with his State of the Union, Governor Kim Reynolds with her Republican rebuttal. From the conflict in Ukraine to inflation to the response to the pandemic, major topics facing the U.S. Local 5's Mary Sugden breaks down the two speeches.
Putin's latest attack on Ukraine was premeditated and totally unprovoked. He rejected repeated efforts at diplomacy.
While President Joe Biden places the Ukrainian conflict squarely on Vladimir Putin's shoulders, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds says the U.S. pullout of Afghanistan emboldened our enemies.
Weakness on the world stage has a cost, and the president's approach to foreign policy has consistently been too little, too late. It's time for America to once again project confidence. It's time to be decisive. It's time to lead.
Biden addressing the nation after what he says have been two of the hardest years it's ever faced, but touting the success he believes the American Rescue Plan has had in lifting Americans up.
Unlike the $2 trillion tax cut passed in the previous administration that benefited the top 1% of Americans, the American Rescue Plan helped working people and left no one behind.
Reynolds, however, saying his leadership has only led to inflation and a hit on Americans' pocketbooks.
While Democrats in D.C. are spending trillions, sending inflation soaring, Republican leaders around the country are balancing budgets and cutting taxes because we know that money spent on Main Street is better than money spent on bureaucracy.
Biden also addressing public safety after protests over law enforcement's role have divided the country.
That's why the Justice Department has required body cameras, banned chokeholds, and restricted no-knock warrants for its officers. That's why the American Rescue Plan that you all provided $350 billion that cities, states, and counties can use to hire more police.
We now live in a country where violent crime is out of control. Liberal prosecutors are letting criminals off easy, and many prominent Democrats still want to defund the police.
This is just a small point of the remarks from each speaker. If you'd like to read their full speeches, we have them at weareiowa.com. The Republican Party of Iowa criticizing the president's State of the Union, saying in part, quote, the only thing that will bring about change is Americans heading to the ballot box in the 2022 midterms. And on the other hand, the Iowa Democratic Party tweeting a statement sharing their disappointment in the Republican rebuttal, saying in part on Twitter, Kim Reynolds has made it clear that she does not care about Iowa's working families. She only cares about her corporate donors and lining her own pockets. Iowa's transgender girls and women can no longer compete in high school and collegiate female sports. Governor Kim Reynolds making that law after signing a bill Thursday morning in the State House Rotunda. The Iowa Senate passed the bill along party lines Wednesday.
No amount of talent, training, or effort on their part can make up for the natural physical advantages males have over females. It's simply a reality of human biology. Forcing females to compete against males is the opposite of inclusivity, it's absolutely unfair.
The new law applies to schools, accredited non-public schools, and colleges in the state. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for joining us here for This Week in Iowa. Don't forget that we are in the middle, in the throes of a legislative session. So coming up next week on This Week in Iowa, we'll have a full wrap of everything that happened at the State House this week. And of course, we have a podcast. Anywhere that you find your podcast, just search This Week in Iowa. Have a great rest of your weekend, everyone.